Rockland.
The following program is furnished by its producer, host, and sponsors.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We're live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland, and it's streaming live online at WRCR.com. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Health in 30 brings you 30 minutes of the latest health and medical news and information with leading guest medical experts. Today we'll be talking with Dr. James James, director of the American Medical Association Center for Public Health Preparedness and Disaster Response and editor-in-chief of Disaster Medicine and Public Health Preparedness. Dr. James brings over 30 years of experience in the public and private healthcare sectors as a clinician, researcher, and program director. Dr. James is board certified in general preventative medicine, earned a doctorate in medicine and public health, and a master's in healthcare administration. Dr. James served over 26 years with the U.S. Army Medical Department and serves on numerous boards, commissions, and committees addressing national policy and operational issues around preparedness and response. Listeners, call in with any questions. The call-in number is 845-624-1300. And joining us now is Dr. James James. Hi, Dr. James. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Great to be here.
Great, thanks. How are you?
Oh, doing fine.
Oh, great.
I finally found a phone.
Oh, good. Dr. James, the listeners of Health in 30 are both professionals in healthcare and the general public. Before we address the general public, let's first talk to the health professionals regarding you as editor-in-chief of Disaster Medicine and Public Health Preparedness. Talk to the health professionals a little bit about the journal and what's involved with that.
We have, let me start at the beginning. We began our journal almost exactly a year ago, and we very, very carefully selected the title for it as Disaster Medicine and Public Health Preparedness, because we really wanted to show the tie-up and the necessity to integrate medicine and public health when we're talking about preparing for and responding to disasters. So that was one of the things. But the primary motivation for the journal, we did quite a bit of research, if you will, in the sense of trying to identify where the disaster medicine literature was. And we found that between 80 to 90% of articles, and there were quite a few articles, appeared in general medical and specialty medical journals. And then, of course, there was a lot of non-science type of articles, non-peer-reviewed material that was in more popular magazines, etc. Given the interest in disaster medicine, we felt there was an opportunity here to establish a journal that could help to build the necessary scientific base for the evolution of a discipline of disaster medicine. And one other thing is, this is not a journal or an effort that's of, by, and for physicians. It includes physicians, obviously, but it includes all potential healthcare responders, especially those that are in health profession schools. Our board is very eclectic. We've got individuals from public health, nursing, veterinary, mortuary. You can go on and on. We currently publish four times a year. We have done very well on the content that we've received. We're probably able to project out full publication for the next year to 2 years based on the content that we currently have. And the other exciting thing, and the professional folks out there will really appreciate this, is we are, if not the only journal I'm aware of to ever be indexed by the Library of Medicine within a year of its publication. That's something that usually takes 2 to 3 years. So we're very excited about the journal, and we're reaching out to healthcare responders in terms of building up our base, getting content, but also having individuals serve as reviewers and other positions in the journal.
What type of articles would health professionals find in there for them?
If you look at the first four issues, let me start with the special issue that we did, and this is something that we will continue every September, where we will have a special issue during National Preparedness Month. The issue last September was the public health and medical response to the shootings at Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. And so we covered the whole gamut of things from the perspective of the emergency room, physician, the ambulance service, the police and fire response, the mortuary requirements and pathology requirements, and maybe most importantly, how the response was integrated across all of those sectors. Normally in our other issues, our goal is always to have 3 to 4 peer-reviewed articles up front, if you will. And they can address a variety of issues. We've had looking at consequences of Katrina, both on the population of New Orleans, but also on health professionals who were directly affected. We are very interested in the legal and ethical aspects of what we do, and we've had several really outstanding articles addressing those areas. We haven't had material on the Minnesota bridge collapse. There's material coming up on the San Diego wildfire. We've had a couple of excellent articles coming out of the tsunami. We have some other material in the pipeline coming out of Japanese experience in planning for public health emergencies, especially earthquakes, which they on average have more than one a day in Japan over the course of a year. Mm-hmm. Content providers have come from medicine, law, ethics, nursing, the modeling community. We had one, I thought, really outstanding article on the potential implications of a radionuclear event, in this case, looking at a an actual nuclear detonation and the impact that would have, obviously, on the population, but also on the healthcare system responding to that population.
So basically, it's a resource then for any health professional that they any natural disaster or man-made disaster, they can go and use it as a resource from preparing for the event or and post-event.
Yes. And that was the main purpose of it. When you look at disasters, if you will, mm-hmm. I mean, there's obviously a wide gamut of scenarios that you can entertain. And what we have tried to do is to look at how do we get the integrated input so that we have proper echeloned planning ahead of time, that we have the ability to transform that plan into effective and efficient operations, and then, if not most importantly, certainly first among equals, the education and training and preparation of actual healthcare responders when something does happen.
Mm-hmm. So even hospitals can use it as a resource in in preparing for any potential disaster that may arise.
And I think there's a better way to answer your question.
Okay.
We aim at looking at all potential healthcare responders. Okay. And that could be you mm-hmm. in your everyday life as a nurse. Mm-hmm. It could be me as a physician. It could be a hospital worker. It could be the man on the street who has to come and give some kind of emergency first aid. So the material we're trying to get across, even though we're trying to keep it scientific and epidemiologically based, we're hoping that those materials are a resource for all of the disciplines, certainly that comprise medicine and public health, but also first responders, et cetera.
Okay, so it's for the general public as well, then, for them to be prepared?
Again, it's a very difficult balance you're bringing up there, because we are committed to being a scientific journal, a peer-reviewed journal, but at the same time, we realize we have an obligation to address the citizen, if you will, and we're doing that through some programs, and we're trying to find the best way to accommodate that in the journal. One of the things that we're beginning is a special section which will address Medical Reserve Corps issues, and we look at that as an excellent interface between what we would call the medical professional and the citizen.
Right. So actually, though, the health professional could use that as a resource and then bring that information to the general public, whether it's in a forum-type thing or some educational program, they can educate the general public on their role as well. That's a great it's not online, it's a journal, actually, though.
It's a hardcore journal, and it is online.
Oh, okay.
Its current publication cycle is once every 3 months, four times a year, plus a special issue, and we're trying to move that up. We have the content for it.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to move that up to initially six every 2 months, six issues.
That's great. That's a great resource. Let's move to the general public a little bit. No one likes to think of disasters occurring, but preparation and being prepared is so important. What would you say to the listeners should be their first role in getting ready or being prepared for a disaster, whether it's natural or man-made?
No, absolutely. And, you know, that is not a difficult question to answer, but it's difficult to operationalize. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
You think it, I think it, the citizen thinks it. It's not going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And really trying to overcome that perception, that sense of immunity for you as an individual is one of the major obstacles that we need to overcome in terms of getting people to really address this seriously. And I think with all of the experiences we've had recently with the floods and with Katrina, with the wildfires, et cetera, people are starting to realize nobody's really immune. This could happen anywhere, anytime to one of us. So the first step is the individual, and getting insight into that this could happen. And if it does, I map out three levels of responsibility.
Okay.
The first level is to yourself. Take care of you. Because if you don't take care of you, you can't take care of anyone else. So you've got to watch out for your own safety and try and garner the necessary background to be able to understand better what's going on and how you can protect yourself. The second level is protecting your family constellation, and that's obviously going to change with different people. But as a general rule, take care of you, and then be sure and take care of your family. If you're comfortable at those two levels, that's been accomplished, then there's a third level where you, I believe, have an obligation to come to support your community, to help others in that community. So I look at that as a three-phase process. Now, in terms of the everyday things, once you're especially looking at what do you need to do to take care of your family, and those are simple things, and it really is the old thing of having a 7-day water supply or a 5-day water supply and lots of canned food. And if you live in the Arctic, having, thought that through, and what would you do if you needed, an alternate heat source. Just the basic ABCs, even though it doesn't always happen, for the most part, you can expect outside help, certainly within, 2 to 5 days. And if you can be self-sufficient for that period of time, I think you're doing yourself, the best you can do. Because you don't know what's going to happen. There's such a variety of things out there. The second thing we really try to encourage people is to get involved in a volunteer sense, whether it's through the Red Cross, the Medical Reserve Corps, your local public health department, your hospital, whatever, so that you're plugged into something, into a system, and you begin to understand how that system works and your role in it.
Dr. James, we will take a quick 60-second break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are you suffering from dry, cracked, itchy skin? Are you constantly washing and gloving? Well, Glove & Care has the answer. Designed for healthcare workers, Glove & Care hand cream is all you need to relieve dry, cracked, itchy skin without compromising glove integrity. Glove & Care hand cream's unique formula is made with minerals and water from the Dead Sea. It penetrates deep into your skin to rehydrate it from the inside out. And just a tiny amount of Glove & Care will help protect your skin from the harmful irritants associated with disposable gloves and soaps. But the best part is that it will last you through multiple hand washings without compromising glove integrity. So wash those hands and put on some Glove & Care. You'll feel your hands become silky smooth as you work. GloveAndCare.com, where hands go to heal. So visit us today at www.glovencare.com.
And we are back. Those of you who are just tuning in or logging on, this is Health in 30, and I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Today we're talking with Dr. James James, director of the American Medical Association Center for Public Health Preparedness and Disaster Response, and editor-in-chief of Disaster Medicine and Public Health Preparedness. And we're talking about preparing for and reacting to emergency disasters. Call in with any questions. The number is 845-624-1300. Dr. James, before we went to break, you were talking about individual insight, about taking care of self, family, and then the community. Once self and family is taken care of, then you can go out and try to help the others in the community.
I strongly believe that. And if you look at the literature that is available, approximately 50% of life and limb that is saved or retrieved in a real disaster comes from your next door neighbor, your family member. It doesn't come from the professional responders, because they're as affected by a local event as anyone else, and the outside help isn't going to get there at least for 24 hours or so.
In your experience, do you find a lot of people are prepared in terms of having enough water, bottled water, and enough medications on hand, and everything that they would need to survive a few days?
You know, that is a great question, and one that we're trying to actively explore. I think we've done a lot of work getting the message out, be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't done a lot of work going out and finding out if people are prepared. Now, some of the not what I would call very scientific surveys that I've looked at that come from different cities and different population groups, et cetera, unfortunately show that probably less than 50% of people are minimally prepared in terms of having, food and water at home, and especially the medications piece. One piece of information that we're going to actively seek out there is, when you're dealing with a chronic illness population that absolutely need their medications, do they have a 14-day supply that they, can go to that, above their normal usage should they need it?
Okay. What do you mean you're working on that now in trying?
In trying to get the data, the information.
Well, okay.
The recommendations are a minimum of, from my perspective, mm-hmm. a minimum of a 14-day reserve for people that are on diabetic medications or cardiovascular medications that are really necessary to maintaining health and life. And somewhere between a 14 and 30-day supply of those medications should be in reserve by any individual in those categories. What we don't know is the number that actually have the ability and have taken the steps to get those reserves.
Right. So, okay. So in addition to their normal everyday medications that they take, this is just put away somewhere in case something happens, right?
A stash.
Right.
And it should be a rotating stash.
Okay.
Like if you're able to build up 7 days or 14 days, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. then when you get a new prescription, you know, you put that behind the older dated medication so you don't run into problems of expiration dates and medicine losing its potency.
Right. And I would suspect it would be a good idea to keep everything together, to keep the bottled water, to keep the canned food, to keep their medications, batteries and flashlights, and everything where it's easily accessible in case there is an emergency.
And absolutely. And you know, it needs to be at a place in the house that, you know, you don't have to run and dig it out. And, you know, it shouldn't be in the attic. You know, it probably shouldn't be in the basement, especially in areas prone to flooding, et cetera. And it's, again, it's more basic common sense than going to some great elaborate scheme.
Right. Has there been any surveys or any studies done in terms of trying to find out if how people how well prepared they are? Or I think you had mentioned earlier, though, about, I mean, everybody knows to be prepared. And
again, I think we've done a great job getting the message out.
Right, yeah.
But we haven't done a great job doing the surveys.
Okay, yeah.
Now, there have been some. Mm-hmm. And, again, I think on average, I would say about 50% of people have gone the extra step of saying, yes, I'm going to get the bottled water. Yes, I'm going to get the canned food. Yes, I'm going to have my medications. But those numbers vary. The CDC did an excellent study on a special medication to keep at home in case of a specific biological kind of problem. And they found that people were very responsible and handled those materials as they were asked to. They kept them in plastic. They were kept in a safe place. Mm-hmm. And they were there for an emergency should it be announced.
And what was that for? That was from...
That was specifically looking at tetracycline or ciprofloxacin.
Okay.
In case there was an anthrax type of problem where you are going to want to get medication to people in a short period of time.
And is there a website that the listeners can go to maybe get a step-by-step checklist, so to speak, to keep on hand so they know what materials
to have? There are several mm-hmm. excellent websites. You know, our website with the journal mm-hmm. will get there. We're not quite there yet.
Okay.
Where that's one of our efforts as we kind of grow. But if you go into the CDC website, you know, you can find out just about anything you ever wanted to know
right.
about disasters and disaster preparation.
Right.
The same with Homeland Security. They've got some excellent material. And a final one that is very user-friendly, and if you can't find what you want, you make a phone call, is the Red Cross.
Okay. Those are great websites you mentioned, the CDC.gov, the Red Cross.
And
Homeland Security.
Security,
yeah. And what's the website for your journal that will incorporate
You know, the best way to get to our website right now, I just don't have the, you know, the long print on that right here, the you know, the actual numeric. But if you go to the AMA website under Disaster Medicine or Journal, you can find it there. And I believe if you put the name, if you Google the name of the journal, you'll get to the website.
Okay. And I just wanted the name of the journal again
Disaster
is...
Disaster Medicine
and
Public Health Preparedness.
Okay, great. So for the listeners, what do you think, singly right now, the most important thing that they can do? I know nobody likes to think of disaster, but really to be prepared, what can they do right now?
I think there are a couple of things. Number one, like I said, you know, start to look at those first two levels. How am I going to take care of me? How am I going to take care of my family? And if you haven't gone out and bought your water and have your canned food at home, I mean, those are those should be fairly simple things for most people to be able to take care of. The other thing is this volunteerism, getting involved in a citizen corps or a medical reserve corps or something in the community. It can be through your church. It was found in Katrina that the religious community was really one of the most important resources in bringing people together after the event and in providing help, information, etc. And I think we need to do a better job with that. The other thing, and it's not ready yet, but we're coming out with a program called Citizen Ready, and that's educational. And I'm a very strong believer in the better informed we are, the less fearful we will be, mm-hmm. and the more resilient and effective we will be as individuals and as citizens should something occur.
Right. And better informed in a way, though, there where we're not scaring people where they can...
And that's, I think, one of the cardinal problems mm-hmm. we have today
yes.
with the way... and I'm not criticizing the press mm-hmm. or the radio or the media. I mean, they go to where the story is. Mm-hmm. We, the professionals, need to do a better job of working with the media mm-hmm. to give more factual information. And when we get to a point where the only information tends to make people fearful and afraid, as we went through with SARS and smallpox vaccination, I think we're really doing ourselves a disservice mm-hmm. should something really happen.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree that people have so much in their lives as it is, and to throw fear on top of that is only going to be a detriment to them, and they're not going to be able to focus truly if something does happen.
Absolutely. When we had SARS in Canada, it just about shut the country down. It shut a whole city down for, what, 100, maybe 150, I forget the exact number of cases. Serious disease, yes, but not the kind of impact that should shut a city and a government down.
Right.
And we need to get a better job of objective reporting. And again, that's not aimed at the media. We've mm-hmm. got to do our job working with the media, with folks like yourself and reporters, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Dr. James, thank you so very much. I can't believe how fast a half hour goes.
Oh, I know.
Wow.
You know, when I started this, I said, wow, 30 minutes. And it's gone.
I can't believe it. Really fast. But thank you so very much for joining us, for sharing your expertise with the listeners and the general public health professionals. And that's a great journal that you have. And I'm looking forward, actually, too, to seeing the additions coming about, the Citizens Ready and everything else.
And we're hoping that hits the streets within the year.
Oh, great. Thank you so very much, Dr. James.
Thank you for the opportunity. Take care.
Sure. You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And listeners, as always, if there's a health topic you want to know more about, email us. Go to contactus@healthin30.com. And don't forget, if you have a health question, send it in to healthin30.com, and the experts will answer it. As always, speak up and ask questions. And for upcoming shows, keep a check on healthin30.com. Have a great week. Stay safe. And as always, again, speak up and ask questions. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health in 30. Have a great week.
AM 1300, WRCR, Spring Valley.
Ashes, ashes. One out of seven means they can all fall down, except for Sarah. Why? Because Sarah is uninsured. In fact, one out of seven Americans are uninsured. This isn't just a number or a graph in a report. It's people. Families with simple needs, like wanting to provide for a child. And children who want nothing more than to be children. One out of seven of us is uninsured.
AM 1300, WRCR, Spring Valley.
AP Radio News. I'm Ross Simpson. As many as 350 homes have been flooded in one Missouri county along the Mississippi River. In Illinois, officials aren't sure if the worst of the flooding is over, but new predictions are promising. This good news for several communities. River crests will be lower than expected. Susan Gill was 3 years old in the flood of 1973 and the mother of young children during the 93 flood. She says the uncertainty of what's going to happen in Hull, Illinois, is hard on her family.
What was hardest on me in 93 was losing the place that I grew up. I couldn't take my children back and show them, you know, where I lived when I was a kid. Now my kids are grown. I still have a 12-year-old, and it's hard on him not knowing where he's going to go to school next year.
Former Democratic rivals Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama will campaign together next week.
These words by Hillary Clinton earlier this month.
Join me in working as hard for Barack Obama as you have for me.
Are being put into action. After a bruising fight, Clinton and Obama are going to work together to try to get him into the White House.
I endorse him and throw my full support behind him.
Obama's campaign writes in a brief email, the two senators will campaign together for the first time Friday, June 27th. It's a step toward unifying a Democratic Party, which some analysts say has been fractured. Jackie Becerra, Washington.
John McCain's been in Canada today talking about NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Without naming the presumed Democratic presidential candidate, McCain seemed to take a jab at Barack Obama's opposition to the trade deal.
For all the success of NAFTA, we have to defend it without equivocation in political debate. We have to.
Another losing day on Wall Street. The Dow down 221 points. This is AP Radio News. The Bush administration is pledging to